it's my pleasure to bring you from Walnut Creek, California, which is a suburb of San Francisco, California, Mr. Rodney Stitch. Welcome, Rodney, to Fear Moscow's weekly program.
Yes, good evening, Barry Perryman.
It's great to have you with us. I know it's been a little while since you and I have spoken, Rodney, but I've never forgotten about you and your incredible story and information you have to, you know, to share with people. And, folks, I want you to know, Rodney, he's in his 70s. He has so much information to share. I'm not sure if in this 2 hours we can, you know, cover all the information that he has to say. We're going to try to cover some of it tonight. And next week, hopefully, we'll cover more of the incredible information and real eyewitness live stories and experiences that he has to share, folks. It's due to courageous people like Rodney Stitch, folks, that we know what's going on with our public servants out there. And those of you who have not been to his website, I want to give it to you. The one that I give to everybody, which is easy to remember, is CIADrugs.com. Just like it sounds like, letters CIA, the initials of the Central Intelligence Agency, CIADrugs.com. And then defraudingamerica.com is the other one. And then druggingamerica.com. Is that correct, the website that I gave, Rodney?
Right. But the main one, the really main one, is the defraudingamerica.com. And at that website, they can even download many of my books at no charge.
Well, folks, I got hard copies of Rodney's book. But, yeah, you can review them online as well. Well, Rodney, start telling us first about your background, because you have such a, you know, decades of involvement with the government and you know, whistleblowing on these guys. Tell us how you got started working the FAA, and what year was that you started working with those guys? What led you to be with the FAA to begin with?
Well, first let me mention, I started, my books, which are about 15 of them now, they first covered the politics of air safety. And this is based upon what I discovered during my official duties as an FAA inspector. And my job was hands-on safety responsibilities for the most senior program at the world's largest airline. But and then over a period of years, and I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but over a period of years, as I wrote books and appeared on TV and radio since about 1978, I became kind of a focal point for other government agents. I'm talking about CIA, FBI, ONI, Customs, former drug smugglers, former mafia figures. They've provided me the data over, and this is covering many years. And so I write about this, and this is factual. A lot of it is documented, and it opens up a whole new world of areas that the people have never really heard about. I'm talking about areas of intrigue and corruption. As far as the aviation game is concerned, I started out as a Navy pilot. I was a Navy patrol plane commander in World War II. And after the war, I was a captain for several different airlines, including Japan Airlines. Matter of fact, I have one of the first pilot licenses in Japan. And I was flying for Japan Airlines, and many of my co-pilots were former military pilots who we used to shoot at each other in the Pacific. And then I flew in the Middle East. I lived in the Middle East for a while, including I lived in Tehran and Jerusalem, Beirut, Ramallah. I've flown Muslim. I had plane loads of Muslim pilgrims flying them from all over Baghdad and all over the Middle East to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina. And then I went with the Federal Aviation Administration. And this is where I my entire vision of government changed. But prior to that, I thought, well, government wouldn't do any of these things. But, oh, my goodness, how I learned. But anyhow, that was quite interesting when I discovered that. So my latest book on the aviation bit would be Unfriendly Skies 20th and 21st centuries. Now, we don't have many crashes today, not like when I was with the FAA. It was every few months we'd have a major crash. Well, most of the problems.
And Rodney, what years was that those crashes happened? That was in the early 70s. What period of time was that that happened?
Well, the ones I cover are from about 1950 to about 1985. And we had lots of them in those days. And so people don't, but the same same basic problems that existed then still exist to where we occasionally have disasters that we should not have had. Like, for instance, there's one area in 9/11 nobody addresses because they're not insiders and they don't know about these things. And this is what I address in not only the book I just mentioned, but also another book, Blowback, 9/11, and Cover-Up. And I go into the problems within the government's aviation safety offices that prevented the implementation of known preventative measures that would have blocked 9/11, that have blocked the hijackings. Now, Congress has avoided this area, as has the 9/11 Commission. And if they had entered that area, well, I left a hell of a government record. I even filed lawsuits. There was one filed just prior to 9/11. I filed it in the federal courts in Reno, Nevada, and I tried to expose the problems within the government's aviation safety offices that were responsible for the condition that enabled hijackers to hijack the airlines. And then I also addressed the problems in the FBI and to some extent the CIA that were also, this is the culture in those two government agencies, the FBI and the CIA, that blocked inspectors, agents, from acting on all of the evidence of the scheme.
Well, folks, we're coming on a break right now, but we're just getting started on getting all this fascinating information from a great living American hero, Mr. Rodney Stitch. Hang on, we'll be right back on Phil Morris' program with We the People Radio Network. We're back on We the People Radio Network on Freedom Morris' weekly program with Rodney Stitch, whistleblower who exposes government corruption, who's been doing it for decades. So, Rodney, would you please pick up where you left off before the break, please?
Right. Okay. Just briefly, on 9/11, now, one of the things I did, as I mentioned earlier, I filed a lawsuit in Reno, Nevada. Well, and the basis for this is there's two particular federal statutes that authorized it. One was the Federal Crime Reporting Statute. That's Title 18 U.S.C. Section 4. So I thought, well, hell, I got all this information, and this is reliable information from insiders. So I figured, well, since Congress has been covering up, the FBI and DOJ has been covering up, I'll force the issue. I'll make a judicial record of it. Well, they blocked me. So anyhow,
Hold on. I think that's an important law that we ought to explain to our listeners, Rodney, what it is. What the Federal Crime Reporting Act, for those of you who don't know, folks, what the law is, it's Title 18 or Category 18 of federal laws. There's 50 categories of federal laws, and Title 18 or Category 18 has criminal laws. And Section 4 of that, would you tell our listeners, Rodney, exactly what that law says?
Okay, Title 18, Section 4 says that anyone who knows of a federal crime must report it to a federal judge or other federal official. Well, no one ever reports it to a federal judge, but since I've been through a few decades of cover-ups from everybody else, I thought, well, I'll report it this way and there'll be a judicial record, and it'll force the issue. And federal judges must receive it as part of their administrative duties, not judicial duties. Well, again, they blocked me.
Let me slow down on that a little bit. So, in other words, because you have come across corruption and these guys refusing to investigate, they're covering up the crimes, actually, FBI and DEA and other federal government agencies, when you report to them, they would cover it up. You were under the impression and now the third independent, supposedly, branch of our government, the independent judiciary, which we are told about so much on the news media and our civics classes in high school, you thought that maybe, well, if I go by to this independent judge, that by law I could take the report of crime to him, just as I could report to the FBI, for example, that this guy would now exercise his independence and take an independent view of all this and take a look at all these facts and act accordingly. That was your expectation, correct?
Right. And then there's the other statute was Title 28 U.S.C. Section 1361. And what that says is that anybody can file a federal action seeking a judicial order forcing a federal official to perform his official duties and to halt unlawful conduct. Now, and the least that due process requires under that statute is that we have a hearing and present our case. But they blocked me. Now, there's a lot more.
How they block you? I mean, that's interesting. By so, how could they block you? You go to the judge. You follow the action in the federal court, and you bring it to the judge's attention. How does the judge block you?
Well, first of all, they dismiss it without any hearing. But since you're interested in that area, let me go back a little bit.
Sure.
Earlier, when I'm finding out information on drug smuggling, about October Surprise and all this, and I'm finding this out from insiders now. So I figured, well, these are federal crimes. I'll report it. So what happened, I filed it in the federal court in Sacramento. And what the U.S. attorney did, they charged me with criminal contempt of court. And let me mention why they did that. An earlier attempt to report these things, not only did they block me, but they issued orders. And right now there's about six different judges that have issued orders that permanently bar me from filing any action in any federal court. Now, this is obviously illegal.
Hold on, Rodney. I think you have to slow down for our listeners. I'd like you to elaborate. How was it that it blocked you? Maybe you could tell us when you went to the federal judge, you saw that. The first time you went before the judge, if I remember your speech properly, the very first time you went before the judge seemed to have been actually kind of interested and amused at your reporting of the federal crime, correct? And then maybe later on his attitude changed. Is that what happened?
Well, let me go back just one little bit further. When I first filed these actions, it was primarily against the FAA. And the first two actions, the judges admitted, Mr. Spitz, these are serious charges, but this is up to Congress to investigate. I said, I'm not trying to have you investigate, because first of all, Congress has repeatedly refused. They admit the gravity of it, but I get answers like, oh, this isn't in their area of responsibilities. So anyhow, then I go to the Court of Appeals, and they admit, yes, Mr. Stitz, these are serious. So I go all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and those filings are on my website. So the Supreme Court became aware of this early. But then as I'm learning about these criminal activities in other areas, then I file lawsuits, and they also refuse to receive the information, and they dismiss it without any hearing. Now, when you file a lawsuit, there's got to be a hearing before you dismiss it. They not only dismissed it, but they issued the first of about six different orders over a period of years, permanently denying me the right to file any papers in federal court. So that means anybody can do anything to me that violates my federal rights, and I cannot file a federal action seeking relief. And the purpose of doing this was to block me from not only reporting the criminal activities, but also to block me from defending against parallel actions being taken by a CIA front law firm to silence me. And anyhow, so then when I'm finding out additional material, which, and these are serious matters now, so what they did, the first thing they did, they not only refused to receive my evidence, they charged me with criminal contempt of court, they denied me a jury trial, and I, even though I had an attorney, and they sentenced me at, I think I was about 67 years old at that time, they sentenced me to 6 months in federal prison. Well, this is where I started meeting CIA people, and this is where it opened a whole new area, a whole new world for me. So that was many years ago, and in the last, whenever that was, 20 years ago, I've had dozens of government agents, CIA, FBI, feeding me data. So in a way, it backfired for them, though it wasn't so good for me, because, I mean, this, I was at that time fairly wealthy. I had a lot of real estate, and I foolishly was using, instead of enjoying it, I'm out here getting on radio and TV shows trying to wake up the public. Well, first of all, the public doesn't want to be woke up. Second of all, then they're after me, and at that time I had about $10 million in California real estate. And, of course, they eventually stripped me of all of that. But anyhow, here I'm in the pokey for 6 months. And so to this day, there's still orders out there barring me. But I anyhow, I filed anyhow. And this Michael Mukasey has been in the news lately. And if you recall, he's the former judge from New York who is now the U.S. Attorney General. Well, when I filed, and after 9/11, I thought, I'll make one more effort. So I filed a lawsuit in New York, in the federal courts in New York, where most of the, well, I'll come back to that.
Rodney, you have so much to share. When we come back from the break, I'd like to find out more how they gag you, how the court proceedings run, because I think that tells a lot about how our courts are not fair and unbiased as people expect us to be. We got to talk about that. But hang in there, folks. We're going to come back with more of Rodney Stitch in just a moment on We the People Radio Network. Now, Rodney, I'd like to go back a little bit and you know, elaborate a little bit more on the stuff you mentioned earlier. For example, you mentioned that the Title 28 of the United States Code, Federal Law, Section 1361, forces government employees to do their job. Exactly who were you going after to do their job that were not doing it? And, you know, who is that official you were trying to have them do their job? And just slow down and maybe tell us a little bit more about the, exactly how that went through, the whole, the, how they blocked you. I think it's a very interesting story in and itself. Could you elaborate on that stuff, please, Rodney?
Surely. Well, the very first ones I filed were shortly after I left the Federal Aviation Administration.
What year was that about, by the way?
That was about 1970, and then I filed the first of my lawsuits back about 1978, and that was against the FAA, and I was trying to report what I felt were not only what I felt, what I reported as in the official records as corrupt activities related to certain specific airline disasters, including some that have occurred in my immediate area of responsibilities. So, at any rate, as I mentioned earlier, first thing, the U.S. attorney comes and he wants to dismiss the action. He says, I didn't have standing to report these things. Well, Title 18 U.S.C. Section 4 says anybody has standing if you know of a federal crime, and if you don't report it, you go in the pokey, like many people have gone in the pokey. For not reporting it. So anyhow, as I said earlier, then I went up to the, all the way up to the Supreme Court. Then I filed one against the
National... So, Rodney, hold on a second. the law says that you are required to report the crime if you know about it. Because if you know about a crime and do not report it, you have possibly become a co-conspirator. You are hiding the crime. You become an accessory to the crime. And that's a crime itself. So, in other words, you had a duty, Rodney, to report these crimes that you had documented evidence of. Otherwise, you could have gone to jail for not reporting what you knew to be crimes, correct?
That's right. Also, anybody that blocks me from reporting it is guilty of various criminal acts related to obstruction of justice. So that would be the U.S. attorney. That would be the federal judge who refused to receive the information. And then later on, when they charge me with criminal contempt of court for trying to report them, now you've got still additional crimes that they perpetrated. So it gets pretty serious. But the one against the NTSB, that's the National Transportation Safety Board, had to do with their cover-ups. Because when I was with the FAA, I kept the National Transportation Safety Board informed of the corruption going on, and they covered up for it. And then the one that precipitated it, there was a what was the world's worst air disaster in 1978 was a PSA 727 that crashed into city of San Diego. Well, I did a little investigation, and I started getting some material information on it. This had to do with the crew partying all night and drinking and what have you, which the NTSB was covering up. So I filed a federal action there, and that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. But every place I went, they blocked me. And, of course, you know, when they block me, these conditions continue. So you have...
Well, Ronnie, how did they block you, though? How did they block you?
Well, by refusing to receive the information. And then, of course, when they issued the orders barring me from filing any federal action, so I couldn't report it, that's another way of blocking me. And then when they retaliated against me, charging me with criminal contempt of court, remember, some of these things I was reporting in the FAA order is the same culture that made 9/11 possible. So if you really get into it, you can see how 3,000 people were killed just in one day, and that's only one in a long series of events. So these are serious matters, but it's hard for people to comprehend that, apparently. I don't know why, but it is. But let me go into one other, this is, incidentally, I also have a book out called Lawyers and Judges, American Trojan Horses. You can get information on that on the website at defraudingamerica.com, and you can even download at no charge part of it. But anyhow, after 9/11 occurred, I filed an action in the U.S. District Court in New York City. Now, when that is received, when the papers are in order and it, money is paid, the clerk is required to file it. Well, they did. They refused to file it, and Judge McCasey, he was the judge that eventually received it. For 13 months, they refused to file it until I sent letters to every member of the U.S. Supreme Court advising them of the latest obstruction of justice of judges over whom they had supervisory responsibilities. Well, then they Judge McCasey files it, and within minutes, he's filing a four-page dismissal order, refusing to receive the information. Well, so first of all, when you file a federal action, you're supposed to get a hearing before they dismiss it. And, of course, under the federal criminal statute, they must receive it. But on the other issues, they have to give you a hearing. They can't just dismiss it. And then if you state a federal cause of action, then they must exercise their jurisdiction. Well, they dismissed it. So then I filed a notice of appeal, and I appeared in New York City and I gave oral arguments before the Court of Appeals. That was kind of interesting the way that went. But they also covered up.
Well, tell us about that hearing, Rodney.
Well, it was kind of interesting. In New York, they're very extremely formal on their procedures there. So anyhow, there I am. I'm in a line of about nine. There's nine attorneys before me giving the arguments, and we're limited to 20 minutes. And I noticed the three judges on the Court of Appeals, they rarely looked at the lawyers doing the argument. So anyhow, then I appear along with the U.S. attorney, and in the 20 minutes I was given my argument, they hardly ever turned away from me, which was kind of interesting. So I got the impression, hey, this is a little bit unusual case, which of course it was, and it has serious ramifications if people understand it. So anyhow, they refused to hear it, and then I filed with the U.S. Supreme Court, and they refused to receive it. So this is serious. They talk about due process, equal protection of the law. That's a lot of baloney. And my case is only one example. I give more examples of whistleblowers. Like, for instance, there's whistleblowers who have been falsely accused. Like, for instance, a friend of mine was an FBI agent working under DaVinci. I'll break off.
Yes. We got a break coming up, folks. There's a lot of information that Rodney still has to share with you guys, folks. We just scratched the surface. And the next hour, folks, we're going to give out the call-in number so you can start asking questions of Rodney as well. So hang in. We'll be right back with more of Rodney Stitch on With the People Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody, to Freedom Law School's program on We the People Radio Network. We have the government whistleblower, Rodney Stitch, with us. Rodney, would you continue where you left off before the break, please?
Okay, now, let me mention, why did they repeatedly block me? Well, of course, some of the reasons are obvious, is that these are the original allegations that I was making were extremely serious and got progressively more serious. But there's another thing. Once you cover up for something and consequences happen in the aviation areas, there's more disasters and people are getting killed. So, I mean, here we have a major scandal that affected the federal judges and the U.S. attorneys that were covering up for me. And so they also had to cover up for all of the prior judges who were involved in this. There's another thing they did to me. While I was in prison for contempt of court, they rendered orders seizing all of my assets. Now, they did this without the required hearing, without the notice of a hearing, and, of course, without cause. And then they turned all my assets over to a U.S. trustee by the name of Charlie Duck. Now, there's a big scandal with him, but Duck was eventually sent to prison. But he didn't get to prison until he liquidated all of my assets. So they converted me from a multimillionaire into zilch. So this is something, if you're going to be a whistleblower, you better have the public behind you. And if the public's not going to do anything, you might as well keep your mouth shut and let the country go to hell. But unfortunately, I was stubborn about it, and I kept plugging away like I still am. And I'm still trying to get the public to become aware of these things, because things are getting progressively worse. Now, one of the things about the books I have, they show you a culture. Now, if you, for the younger people just getting into this, you see the corruption today, but you really can't connect the dots. You got to see what has gone on for the last 40 years. And of the 15 books I have, they cover all of these areas. And as I said earlier, it opens up a whole new world to you, and you're better able to understand the truth, because today, media people have been covering up for years, and many of them are on the CIA and another payroll. But with the political pundits we have, there's so much lying going on. They've got to assume the public is terribly ignorant. And now this is one of the things I try to do. And I'm very factual. I don't get into any conspiracy theories, though there's certainly plenty of them out there. But this is information that not only I discovered in my official duties, but where you've got a whole slew of people, drug smugglers, mafia figures, FBI agents and others, all feeding me data. And a lot of these people paid very dearly for doing that.
You mean people that gave you information that you publicized later on, these people themselves? Because of the fact that they gave it to you and you publicized it, they somehow silenced them, maybe they hurt them, their family members, or they killed them perhaps?
I got a list of the people who had false charges made against them, people who were murdered. Now, the Defrauding America book really goes into a lot of these different areas. But let me give you an example. Well, there's so many examples. Well, here's one example. An FBI agent. He's a highly decorated Vietnam helicopter pilot. This is a good example of what really happens to to GIs when they get out. He was highly decorated. Then he becomes an FBI agent. For about 10 years, he's in the New York office. And he's reporting CIA involvement in the illegal arming and funding of Iraq during the 1980s. So this, of course, involved the Reagan-Bush administration. Well, he's trying to make the reports, and they're telling him to knock it off. Well, his boss was FBI agent Lindley DeVicchio, the fellow who was recently charged with four murders, incidentally. So here he's trying to report these things, too. But anyhow, well, first thing before the election, to silence him, they charge him with misusing a government credit card and putting $8 worth of fuel into his personal car that he was using on government business that he was authorized to do. But that immediately gets him out of the picture. And then they get the feds have enough control over state prosecutors to where then the state prosecutors got into the act. And they charged him with improper conduct with teenage boys at a athletic club that was a CIA, that was an FBI front. So anyhow, he's now in prison up in Dannemora, New York. I think he has about a 50-year prison sentence. This is the way we treat not only veterans, but those who try to protect national interest. And he's only one of probably two dozen people that I mentioned in my book that paid the price for coming forward when the media won't support him, Congress won't support him, and the public won't do anything.
So, in short, what you're talking about is the fact that we have the prosecutors, the state prosecutors like district attorneys, the federal prosecutors, the United States attorneys who are part of the United States Department of Justice. These guys are actually U.S. Department of Injustice. They actually promote and protect injustice. And the judges that they go before, that they're supposed to be independent. And, look at these things from an independent third branch of government. Rather than being the independent third branch of government, they actually become part of the corrupt criminal conspiracy and cover things up. They that they dismissed reporting of these crimes, and then they railroad people to convictions when they know these cases are wrong. They are cases against whistleblowers are baseless. They know the person is trying to be silenced. They actually help silence the whistleblowers. And given the fact that you got this unholy alliance of the crooked executive and the crooked judiciary, and the fact that the congressmen, the legislative branch of government, they really don't do anything about this stuff. They're too busy doing whatever they're doing, passing a lot more baseless laws. That really, the whole government is under corruption. That leads us going back to the American people, because the major media is also controlled, and they don't want to talk about this stuff. You go to them. So what we can do is all that's left is really use alternative media, like this network, like Weezy People Radio Network, to get the information out to the American people, what's going on with the corruption of the U.S. government. That's really very deep. It's out of control. And how we need to take control of it, because it's just going to continue to get worse and worse unless enough Americans realize what's going on and we all take action. Does that kind of summarize it for you, Rodney, what you've been telling us?
Oh, absolutely. And people don't realize that prosecutors will oftentimes file false charges against individuals. They'll use perjured testimony. They'll pressure people to give false testimony, and in some cases either pay them in some way or say, look, we won't charge you if you will testify in this manner. So we have many innocent people who are in prison, some of them for life. I'm in contact with these people. Some of them want to commit suicide. Their lives come to an end, and they were innocent. And so people have to realize, and also judges, people think, and there are some judges that are fair, but so many of them, and a lot of them are former Justice Department prosecutors, and their loyalty seems to be to covering up for the Justice Department. But the corruption in the courts, people have no comprehension of. And this is why almost every book I have written, I go into the corruption in the courts and the legal fraternity. And, of course, some of the later books, like I mentioned, Lawyers and Judges, American Trojan Horses, helps give you examples. And this is what people who are really want to do something about the corruption, it's ammunition they can use.
Wow. Incredible, folks. And truly incredible. The situation the American people are facing is not one that you expect to have in a free country. Folks, I come from Iran. Shah of Iran, it was a tyranny back there, a dictatorship. Come to America, thinking we have the rule of law, the Constitution is supreme, and not the law of men, not arbitrary government, not despotism and corruption. So here we have it, folks, in America, the worst kind. The unholy alliance of the criminal, executive, and judiciary to ignore everything to cover up. Folks, we're going to come back at the top of the hour and hear more of Rodney Smith about all this. We'll be right back on We the People Radio Network.